If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Merkel Media.
Of it and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
I went around that truck and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to Hammer Lane Legends. I am Brian Merkel.
And I'm Brian Shipper.
If you have a crazy and wild story you would like to share with us from the road, go ahead and get a hold of us. At hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. Send us an email or go to the Hammerlane Legends webpage. You can hit the contact section. You can get a hold of us that way. Either way works for us. Just get a hold of us. We'd love to talk to you, have a conversation with you about your experiences on the road. That's the whole point of the show, is to get the driver's experiences out there and shine a light on not the industry itself, but on the drivers in the industry, because basically they are the industry. Without the drivers, there is no industry. Ship, tell them about the voicemail line.
Voicemail line, 515-585-MERK. That's 515-585-6375. A short story, 5-10 minutes, of something that you might have seen, something happened on the road, anything like that. 10 minutes at the longest, that would be about it. You have more than that, get a hold of Jack. We'll schedule to be on the show. We could do an interview for you.
Exactly. That would be awesome. You know, just getting, you know, maybe that will inspire somebody while they're telling their story on the voicemail line. Hey, you know what? I got more stories to share. I'm going to go on the show. I'm going to send an email. I think that's right. Fantastic. If you find yourself in need of some preparedness type of stuff, you know, like 25-year food, 30-year coffee, water filtration, air filtration, all those things. You can check that out at preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com. And, get what you need. Take a look. See what they've got. See if they have something that you're in need of, that you'd like to have, just to, so that, you know, when, as this thing falls apart, as we're looking at it all kind of collapsing around us, you know.
It's not so, Joe.
I know. What am I thinking? You know, right. Like, it's all going to fall apart. It's not. This is America. It's not. Yeah. So anyway, if you find yourself in need of those types of things, go ahead and check it out at preparewithhll.com. Ship, tell them about Buy Me a Coffee.
Yeah, buy me a
Yeah, buy me a
Buy me a coffee. Keep us fueled. It's a virtual tip jar. If you like the show, you feel free. You want to hit the tip jar, go right ahead. We appreciate it. We're looking at it. And we thank the people that have already contributed.
We are going to do some shout outs to those people.
Right.
You know, we're going to compile a list.
We've just learned how to find your names.
We did. We're learning as we go. You know, you're talking, you know, the two of us are not
computer literate.
Yeah, we're not computer savants.
Right.
You know, we're just okay. Not. So we'll just leave it at that.
Right. There you go.
So anyway.
So when you hit the website, you can click on that. Also click on the gear section.
There you go.
Check out what we got there. We're on all the social media platforms. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and all the other things we got there. So,
there you
go. With that said, on with the show.
On with the show. Well, you know what? Today we're talking with Scott. Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're doing really well. It's good to talk to you. 60, thank you.
60-40.
Well, you know, shipper 60-40. You know, 60-40, that's still 100%. So at least it's not less.
Right.
Yeah. 40, usually he's like, you know, 50-20. So, hey, 60-40 ain't bad, you know?
Call me on a good mathematical day.
There you go.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah. Scott, tell us. Oh, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of like how you got into the industry and a little bit about who you are, and then we'll get into your stories and all that.
Well, I got into the industry. I started working at a block company right out of high school. And I started off in the plant, making blocks, cement blocks and patio blocks and the like. And they had a driving, you know, they had drivers. My dad had worked there for, my dad retired from the place with 38 years of service. But at the time, he had, I don't know, 20 some years or whatever. I was working with him in the plant, basically. And then they had an opening out in the trucks. And this was, you know, in the early 90s, early 90s when I started there in 88. But it was the early 90s when I started thinking about going out on the truck. And I asked the owner, you know, if he would mind if I made the switch from the plant to a truck driver. And, you know, he said he didn't mind. So I didn't go to driving school. I basically rode with some of the old timers for a little while, and they threw me in a truck, and that was it.
That's really cool.
Off I went.
Yeah. So you spent time actually doing the job, building, making the blocks, and then you transitioned into delivering the blocks.
Yeah, actually. I mean, I worked there. I worked in the plant for like 3 years or 4 years. They actually sent me to, it's called Betzer School. The machine that made the blocks was called a Betzer machine.
Right.
And it was this giant machine that, you know, it loaded aggregate from the top into a mixer. And the mixer mixed it, you know, with the water and the cement and everything. And then it shot it down this chute into this machine. And this machine was freaking loud. It would, if you can just imagine how hard, you know, cement blocks are, this thing would dump wet aggregate inside of a mold, and then the machine would head would come down and press it down into this mold and vibrate. And after it got done vibrating, the head would lift up out of the mold, and it would come down a assembly line, and it would go into racks, and then the racks would go on rails, the rails would end up in a kiln. So we had kilns that steamed the block. So, you know, they sent me to the school to learn the machine. And I ran the machine on third shift. Me and my uncle did for like a year and a half on third shift. So, yeah, it was cool. I mean, looking back, it was probably one of my best jobs I ever had. I did appreciate it at the time. Of course, I was young and, you know how that is, young, not married, and at the time, and you know, didn't appreciate what I had. I mean, it was a union shop. They paid union wages and, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was lucky enough that the guy let me out on the truck and I didn't have to go to driving school.
Right. You saved yourself $5,000 right off the bat.
You better believe it. Yeah. That's what I, that's what I understand.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. So how did you enjoy, or I don't know, enjoy if that's the right term, but how did you make that transition into the trucks? Did that go pretty smoothly for you? I mean, you went out with somebody, they showed you the ropes.
No, not really. I mean, you know, I was young and bulletproof and, you know, I was still sowing my wild oats and, you know, I didn't realize, you know, I labored. I mean, you know, in the block plant, it was, you know, you labored, you lifted blocks, you know, a lot of times all day long. It depended on what kind of job that we were putting out or what kind of block we were putting out. But, you know, I mean, physically it was demanding. Well, you know, I had no idea how demanding driving was. My first week of driving by myself, I think I was more tired then than I'd ever been laboring just because of the, you know, the mental factor. And right. I wasn't expecting that, you know, the concentration that you have to have, you know, that transition was really a smack in the face to me because I had no idea. I really didn't. And, you know, we drove block trucks basically. So, I mean, it was a physical job as it was, but so, yeah, it wasn't the physical part that got me. It was more the mental thing, you know?
Right. Sure. And then initially when you got out of making the blocks, you thought, you know, I'm done lifting this stuff around and, you know, bags and this and that. I'm going to drive. That's easier.
Yeah.
How do you like me now?
More blocks. I probably lifted more blocks driving than I did making them.
Right.
You know, we were required 12, you know, we would have to make up the orders to put them on the truck because every job was different pretty much.
Right.
For the most part, our specialty was basements. We stocked basements, for, you know, so if you think about it,
block foundations and stuff like that.
Yeah. So we were like the second one on the job site. So if you could think about that, you know, the only guys that were there before us really is the excavator would be first, and then they would dig the hole and then they would come and pour the foundation for the footer.
Right.
But then that would be it until we got there, you know, and then, so, you know, you talk about being stuck or, you know, most of the time we'd have to go, they would provide you usually with one driveway that would have these big rocks in it.
Right.
You know, so that you get, but that no way, that, no how.
That driveway was about 15, 20 feet and you had to go another quarter mile down the road and it was mud.
That, or it was 25 feet from where we really needed to be.
Gotcha.
You know, like we're towards the middle of the house, you know, or middle of the basement.
Right.
But yeah, so we really were known in the industry is providing great service, which that's, you know, what we were known for at that place. So we on a daily basis got our trucks buried. You know, I mean, I a lot of times the bed normally would be up to my mid chest if I was standing in the yard. But a lot of times I'd get that truck so buried that I'd have to step down onto the bed. It'd be so buried in the mud. You know, the front end sometimes would just get totally buried up to the, you know, up to the bumper, up to the grill. But then now that's where we would earn our money. We use the boom to lift the sides of the trucks up or the front of the truck up, whichever we needed to lift up. And we'd stuff blocks down in the hole, you know, down in the ruts.
Down for fill.
We'd break the blocks up, stuff them. And get ourselves unstuck, basically.
Because you don't want that winching bill from the tow truck company.
No, well, yeah, that's exactly what it was. We prided ourselves on not calling tows because, you know, it costs the company money, of course.
Right.
And, you know, you were the weak idiot if you had to call a tow truck. You know, a lot of times we would tag team jobs just so that there was another driver there, you know, another truck there to pull us. But every one of us blew rear ends sometimes trying to get out of the mud. I know I blew probably 3 rear ends in my career there. I know some of the, you know, old timers even would blow a rear end once in a while because, you know, you just think, oh, I can get out of this, you know, and you just give it that little extra oomph and, you know, there it went.
Yep.
So that was an occurrence that happened often.
Yeah.
Well, not often, but but it happened.
Sure.
Because
sure.
those blocks don't float.
No, they don't.
No, they do not. No.
They've definitely got some weight to them. And when you get a bunch of them together, they got an awful lot of weight
to them.
That's
right. That's why they use them over in Jersey.
And if you can haul blocks, you can haul anything, because blocks are basically, you know, they fit in a cube like a puzzle.
Right.
And they're not 100% square. So as you drive, they move, you know. I mean, even if you strap them down, the middle sometimes will shake and vibrate and move. So we were all, you know, you really had to be on top of your game to not lose block on the highway and break somebody's window or,
sure.
you know, speaking of lifting the truck, you know, booming, like I would boom in and grab a cube of block and I would boom it out to lift maybe like say the front was buried. I would shoot a cube of block off the back of the truck and I could lift the front end of that truck up so high that I could literally walk up underneath it and change the oil if I wanted to.
Wow.
Nice.
You know, we'd stuff blocks down in the, you know, where the front was buried and lift, then we'd leave it, you know, let it back down lightly. And after we got unloaded and hopefully we could get out, you know,
right.
That's always the hope. Once you get unloaded, it's, can we get out? So, you know, that,
yeah, but, right.
You know, to kind of give people kind of an idea of how dangerous, you know, that job can be. You had a short story in here about a guy who got the boom up by the electric.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that a little
bit. That was a constant, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. Go.
That was a constant worry for boom truck drivers. Sure. Would be, you know, the older trucks, you were connected to the truck by a cord, and it had a at the end of that cord, you know, there was a controller, mm-hmm. and that's what worked the boom, you know, had left, right, telescope in, telescope out. You know, fork up, fork down kind of deal.
Sure.
And the boom had a cable ran through it, and the cable was connected to forks, and like a tow truck forks. And then the forks would, you know, scoop in, pick up the cube of block and bring it away from the truck. And then you would, you know, shoot it where you needed to go. Well, the old days, you know, like I said, you were connected to the truck by a cord. Well, if you were standing, if you had a hold of that cord, number one, and you were close to wires, the arc could jump. I heard that it would jump. I never seen it personally. I had my hair stand up one time when I got pretty close to some wires, but I never had it arc. But you know, lightning was a bad deal too. If lightning hit the boom, you're basically holding a 35-foot lightning rod in your hand.
Sure.
When lightning storm came. Well, yeah, there was a guy in the industry. He was an old timer, been doing it for, you know, years and years and years. And he was on his bed and he had a hold of the forks with one hand and he was working his boom with the other hand. And he had a cord on his truck because he had an older truck. And he just lack of concentration for 1 minute and he hit some wires and it literally blew him out of his work boots. Died instantly.
Wow.
And come to find out later that he was going through a divorce and he probably had a lack of concentration. Everybody said he was bummed out and real, you know, bummed out about it, of course.
Right.
And, you know, that's all it took was like one, you know, the guy had been doing it for years, you know, could probably do it in his sleep, you know, any young guy would have learned a lot of things from him. He was, you know, really good at it, but you know, 1 minute of lack of concentration and that was it. But later on they went to cordless remotes, which okay. is what I had in my last truck that I drove there. It was a Sterling L9000. I had a cordless boom that really changed the game. I still wouldn't unload in lightning, but you know, and I still wouldn't get close to wires. But you know, I didn't have to worry as much, you know.
Sure, sure. I mean, that's one of the things about, you know, that aspect of the industry, what you're talking about there, and you know, an aspect of the industry all the way around, is that, you know, we don't have an opportunity to have a moment where you lose your concentration in this industry.
Right.
As a truck driver all the way around, I mean, especially doing what you guys were doing there.
Right, they have it doubled, you know,
double duty.
It's driving and unloading and loading.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, you don't get a second chance, you know, in this
right.
industry. There's not a redo. There's not a do over. You know, you have
exactly.
to, you know, if you lose that concentration, you're not paying attention for, you know, a second.
Right.
Anything can happen.
Like Scott said, you know, what? He had his hair stand up. Well, that's about as close as you want to really get to something like that.
Exactly.
Right. That's that inner voice going, hey, stupid.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other aspect of that is like when you're doing something like what you're talking about, okay, that's on the operator who needs to be in concentrating on what he's doing for himself.
Yep.
And when you're in the driving aspect of that, you have to be concentrating on what you're doing and you have to be concentrating on what everybody around you is doing while you're driving, because a lot of times it seems like they're not paying attention to what they're doing.
Oh, that's the thing, on a daily basis, and it's getting worse every year. I see it.
Every day.
You know, when I started driving, there was no texting.
Right.
You know, but we still had, you know, the businessman going down the road, looking at papers, and
right,
the briefcase would be open. You still had the businesswoman going down the road, putting on makeup, and, yep, you know, or the guy eating sandwiches and talking to his buddy and driving with his knees. And that's the thing about drivers that a lot of people don't quite understand. Is we have to live by a different code a lot of times, because mm-hmm, the things that we do in our private life affect our job. You know, you can't have that luxury of going to a party at Christmas time and, you know, making that, having that one or two drinks and making that, you know, mistake of getting behind the wheel.
Yeah.
Even though, you know in your heart that you are totally sober and totally fine to drive, but, you know, try telling that to, your insurance company after you get stopped.
Yep.
And exactly, they hit you with a DUI. I mean, yeah, you know, we live by a different standard and we have to conduct ourselves accordingly, you know, outside of work.
Yep.
And you talk about concentration, yes, it's doubled, because not only are we in charge of ourselves and we represent our company and we have a lot of things that could go wrong on our vehicles. We definitely have to do everybody else's bidding, because we got to watch out for everyone else. You know, it's funny. The longer I drove, I was married for 18 years. Mm-hmm. I got divorced. But when I was married, my wife used to get mad at me because I'd be driving, or she'd be driving after I taught her how to drive. We'd be driving down the road and I'd say, watch that lady there, or watch that guy there.
Yep.
They don't know where they're at. They're looking, they're lost, or they're getting ready to cut in front of you and turn. I can see it in his eyes. I can see him looking in his, and she would say, how do you know how they're going to do these things? You just do after a while. You just kind of locate that person that's going to be trouble.
Yep.
And you fix on them. And that's not to say that there's the person that out of the blue, you know, totally takes you by surprise. That definitely happens. But there usually is always that person out there that you can basically look at and predict just about what they're going to do.
Right. I've said that to my kid already. You know, we as drivers, you know, we're focused, we're taught looking 12 to 14 seconds down the road.
Yep.
These people in the cars, you're lucky they're looking at the car in front of them.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
seeing right, what potential road hazards going on. You know, we as drivers have become accustomed to, you know, like you said, hey, that guy's going to get off this exit. He's just going to shoot right across.
Yep.
You know, a lot of just, you know, quote unquote, you know, normal car four wheel drivers have no clue. They think, you know, we're clairvoyant. You know, if we were clairvoyant, I would have gave you the daily, you know, the Powerball number, and we'd be all retired right about now.
Right. I would have used the Powerball number for me. You know,
I used to come home and tell my wife, I would say, you know what, honey, I swear to God, my work truck is camouflaged, because I swear these people don't see me out there.
Yes, sir. It's like you've got a cloaking device on it and you've engaged it and nobody sees you're there.
Yes.
Yeah. You mean it's like they close their eyes and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, I've seen them cut me off to turn in front of me to make a right turn.
Yes.
It's like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Come from behind me, get beside of me, risk your life and mine, jump in front of me to turn.
Yep.
I'll never get it in 100 years. I'll never get it.
Nope. I totally agree. It's one of those things. It's like when people are driving down the highway and they're in the far left lane, you know, and they want to get off that exit that you're going by now, and they just cut right across traffic and they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, they have no
their
concern.
Their time is way more important than your internet, right?
Yes, that's the problem is everybody gets in their vehicle and they think they're the only person on the road that matters.
The problem is none of these trucks have stickers on the back saying this truck's equipped with Lamborghini braking system. Yeah, we can go 210 to zero and 0.1 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is one of those things. Yeah. And you almost have to have, you know, when I say this, I don't mean, you know, a gambling attitude, but you have to have an ability to read people. You know, right. Just like when when you're playing cards with somebody, you know, some people gotta know when to fold. Yeah, some people can, because if you don't, you know, somebody's going to get folded up inside their car. Yeah.
But you learn to read the traffic
and what, you know, and if it's rush hour traffic in the morning, it's a free for all. I mean, it's literally a free. I just can't understand people. It's like I said before on this show, I wish people showed as much enthusiasm on the job as they show getting to the job. Because, you know, the amount of productivity we'd have. One. Yeah. It's, you know, it'd be freaking fantastic. You know,
and that brings me to one of my pet peeves, which is driverless trucks. That is a sticking point with me, man. That's a surefire way to get my dandruff up is talk about that. But that is the factor that I don't understand how they're going to be able to do that.
Yes.
You know, with nobody in the driver's seat. I don't understand how they're going to be able to account for that unknown, for that total surprise unknown.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that steps out from the curb or the lady that's totally lost. Or I had an old lady one time, we were on the highway on Route 77 and it was an off, you know, an on-ramp to go to 77 North, I think it was. And, merge from traffic, you know, doing the speed limit, you know, and the merge, you didn't have to really slow down that much. Well, this old lady was in front of me and she was quite a few, car lengths up. I could see her, but she stopped dead on this on ramp, stopped dead. And I'm behind her, you know, doing the speed limit or more. And, you know, I was able to get around her, but I mean, you know, was just confused. She thought she was in the right lane. She wasn't. She got confused and she stopped right in the middle of the road.
Meanwhile, your pucker power, you know, excavated a little bit.
Oh, man, I got a pucker meter. Believe me. Oh, boy.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
You're doing
so. That reminds me of a story, too. When I was driving for the block company, I was in an old Diamond Rio. Anyone knows what those were back? It was a late 70s Diamond Rio.
Yes. And, not a ring, people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a truck.
Yeah.
That and Brockway.
Yeah, well, and speaking of trucks, there was a mid 70s Brockway. If that's not one for the history books, it had an old screaming Detroit in it with two levers in it, you know, two stick shifts. I mean, this thing was a job. The steering wheel was, the steering wheel had to be, I don't know, 2 foot, 3 foot
huge
circumference. Yeah, it was humongous. But I was going down this incline, and at the time, I was a new driver. So I, you know, it was ultimately my fault. I didn't catch the air leak in my pre-trip because I didn't do a pre-trip because I was a new driver. And, you know, like I said, I was bulletproof.
Right.
I'd only been driving about a year. But like I said, I had to learn everything the hard way. Well, I had an air leak in one of the brake chambers, and it didn't really come into factor until I was going with the flow of traffic. I think it was a 45-mile-an-hour speed limit or 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. And it was a downhill grade. It was probably 400, 500 yards down this hill. And as soon as I started down this hill, the light at the very bottom of the hill turned red. And there was about 4 or 5 cars in the left lane, and there was one single person in the right lane, and I could see her. It was a lady driving. And I started hitting my brakes, and I knew right away that I was in trouble. I just started losing air. And as I'm pressing down the brakes, I got that, you know, that brake fade, and my foot just keeps going farther and farther to the floor, and I'm smelling smoke, and, you know, I'm losing air. I'm not stopping. My brakes are fading. I'm not even slowing down at this point. I got on the horn and I just started laying on this horn. I mean, I was not giving it up. And thank God this lady had enough sense to look in her rearview mirror and see what was coming behind her. And she had enough sense about her to get out of my way. She went through the intersection, because right after she went through it and got over, I blew through that intersection. If there had been cars coming, I would have creamed them. But, you know, that's the kind of thing that, you know, I had to learn the hard way, and I never, ever got into a truck again without checking, make sure I didn't have air leaks. You know, I'm lucky that I didn't have to learn the real hard way by right. killing someone or myself, yeah. but you know, that's something I had to deal with back in the day. And we had very little maintenance on these vehicles. I mean, you know, it was, I mean, if you can remember in the 90s, the boom, the building boom in the 90s, I mean, we were so busy sometimes. I'd work 7 days a week, and, you know, there'd be no dent in the, in the month's ledger. You know, I mean, there was just more basements than we could possibly stock. You know, they couldn't make enough block at the time, running three shifts, you know.
Wow.
But yeah, we stayed busy.
Yeah. And you know, that's, you know, you have these times of boom where it's like, hey, everybody's busy and everybody's running, and you're running your keister off. There's just no getting around that. Yep. You're working all the time.
Yep.
And in this industry, yep. it can be so unforgiving, you know.
Yeah.
Again, you know, you can become tired, distracted, you know, all those things. And it's just, you know, you do the best you can to keep going, you know, because that's what it takes.
Yeah. And, you know, at the time, you know, you don't really think about it. I thought it'd last forever.
Yeah.
You know, just young and just living life, married, raising kids, you know, and just at the time. And you know, you just, the good times are there, and I didn't really even realize how good they were. You know, the company ended up actually going out of business. I ended up hurting my back on that job. Mm-hmm. I was off. I didn't work anywhere for 7 years.
Wow.
I was out. I had back surgery. They put me, workers comp put me through school. I went for computers and did well. I made the dean's list and everything at a business school. And I got out, and I, from just being in school, I was so stir crazy. You know, I went right back to driving. I couldn't even fathom working indoors with false lighting for the rest of my life.
Right.
Yeah, I just couldn't even think about doing something like that. I love driving. It's what I've always really wanted to do, you know, as far back as I can remember.
See.
My dad, when I was a little kid, my dad, I think I told you, he retired from the place that I worked. Yeah. When I was a little kid, I used to go in sometimes with him because he'd work third shift by himself cleaning up. And I'd stay there, you know, until my mom would come pick me up. And it was a palace for a little kid. It was a playland. They had sand, and, you know, you could climb things, and they had big, you know, piles of, you know, aggregates, and there was nobody there except for my dad, you know, in this giant, you know, facility with all these blocks and,
sure.
you know, out in the yards. But my dad would set me up in the cab of this old man's truck that would come in there and bring aggregate for the blocks. And I never forget what that feeling was when I got up in that driver's seat. And I'm probably only 9 or 8 or 9 years old, maybe even younger. And I got up in there and I just went, wow. You know, to me, it looked like the cockpit of a plane, you know, all these levers and dials and, you know, what's this do? What's that do? You know?
Yep.
And I got the bug early, man. And that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, that's what I ended up doing. And I'm happy. You know, I love driving. I really do. There's only a couple of things in this world that I'd rather do more. And, you know, I like the outdoors. So I probably would have been a good biologist or, wildlife biologist or maybe mm-hmm. a game warden or something. But driving was my niche, and I found it early.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of those things that's really kind of cool about this industry is it, you know, you either get that itch for it and you do it.
Yeah.
Or you never do and you hate it, you know,
yeah.
It's just one of those things. And you just, you know, and you will look for something else to do. That's what's going to wind up happening if you don't enjoy doing it.
That's why I see these guys driving and, you know, they talk about how much they hate driving, how much they hate their jobs and mm-hmm. how they can't wait to retire. And that's all great. I get it. I mean, you know, sure. Everybody wants to retire eventually, but I swear to God, I'm 53 now, and I can't see myself retired. I mean, I want to drive as long as they'll let me, as long as I can get up in that cab and switch them gears and, you know, not run over somebody. I'm going to drive, you know, that's my plan.
Yeah. And, you know, it is a job that you can do. You know, you get into a company where, you know, you're doing dropping hooks and things like that. You know, like what some of the, we have guys at Pitt that will retire and then come back and they'll just do some, you know, running around doing some dropping hooks and things like that. It's one of those things you can do that with. You know, it's that type of job.
Yeah, and like the job I'm doing now is hauling milk. It's a lot different than hauling blocks, let me tell you. You know, it is that kind of job where, you know, you could be up in age and do this job, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really tremendously taxing on your body. So it's a good thing.
Yeah. Chip, you got any thoughts on any of that?
Milk, it does the body good.
The milk is definitely a whole nother animal. Some of the things I've hauled from when I left. One more story I'll tell you about when I was working at the block company. Well, maybe two, but there's one. They had this long nose international tractor trailer, and we used it to haul a cement tanker. We hauled our own cement in there, and then we used it to haul a 48-foot boom trailer. The boom was on rails, and it would you would start it up, and it would move backwards and forwards on the bed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was in that truck. I was loaded going, I don't even know where I was going, but I was on 271 going north, and there was a traffic jam. So I got to be in the farthest left lane because 271 and 480 kind of split, and I got to be in the left lane. So I'm in that left lane, and there's traffic as far as I can see, and it stopped for a while. So as the traffic started up, you know, of course I put it in first, and I'm letting off the clutch, and I'm going, you know. And you know, as the traffic keeps going, I hit second, I hit third, fourth, you know, came accordingly. And pretty soon, about a quarter of a mile after I had started, all of a sudden I see this little sports car come spitting out from underneath my vision. Basically, he was blocked from the hood and hit the van in front of him. I don't even know where he came from. He's just out of nowhere. This guy's hitting the van that's in front of him that I was driving using that van for my distance. I was keeping that van's license plate, you know, in my vision.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a rule in traffic. I would try to keep the person's license plates above my hood at all times. And that would give me enough stopping distance in traffic, you know.
Sure.
Of course, on highway speed, it would be a little different, well, a lot different. But here, this guy, what he had done was, when the traffic had stopped, he weaseled his way, like, catty-cornered in front of me, kind of like half in, half out of the lane.
Mm-hmm.
So the hood was so long, and he was so small, and he got in so tight to me that when the traffic started, the normal progression of speed, as he fell in front of me, I was already on top of him, bumping him all the way up this bridge. And it was probably a quarter of a mile worth of bumping. And he just trumped his brakes. He froze and hit his brakes. And I'm bumping him forward, boom, 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 all the way up this bridge. I didn't even know it. I couldn't feel it. Didn't see him. Well, when he finally, I don't know, something snapped and he hit the gas pedal and he hit the guy in front of him and we all stopped. I got out. This guy got out of his car, and he was shaking so bad. I've never seen anybody shake like this. He was shaking literally. You could probably almost hear his knees knocking together. I thought he was acting at first, but he was literally petrified. Because here, this giant international grill is in his back, you know, seat probably for a quarter of a mile, and I don't see him, and I'm bumping him, boom, 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 and I'm sure it was probably knocking him for a loop. I didn't feel anything, but. You know, here this guy, you know, and I didn't get in trouble for that. They cited him for giving me lack of, what did they call it? Not allowing me sufficient room to stop or something of that nature. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't get ticketed. The insurance people and everybody faulted him for cutting me off, basically, in front of me, because I never seen him. I mean, they're so easy to do. And then one time, I'll tell you this story and then maybe we can move on. But one time I was on the highway and I was in an old mid-80s Mack truck with a the bed was steel. Uh-huh. The other beds on the block trucks were plywood with steel rimming, but this was a total steel bed. The whole thing was steel. So you can imagine how heavy this truck was. And I had it fully loaded of the heaviest block that we had. So I was really heavy. I don't even really know exactly how heavy I was. I was probably over 70,000. And I'm driving down the highway, down 90. And I look in my mirror. I'm going to make a lane change. And I see this guy, you know, kind of way far behind me. And I, you know, you don't just rip these trucks in lanes. So I put my blinker on. I'm easing over. And by the time I got over, he's on top of me. He was flying, in other words, you know, just flying. Well, he got mad because he thought I cut him off. Well, you know, if he wouldn't have been doing 110 miles an hour, I never would have, you know, cut him off. If he had been doing normal speed, that never would have even got that close. Well, he got up next to me and got around me, got in front of me, and he tromped his brakes. I'm talking a brand new Chevy pickup, still had the 30-day tag on it.
Wow.
He tromped his brakes and he stuck his finger out the window. He stuck his hand out the window and was giving me the number one sign, you know?
Yep.
One hand on the driving steering wheel, one hand out the window, giving me the finger, and he stopped. And I don't know what he thought I was going to do, but I tried tromping my brakes. My truck laughed at me. I don't, you know, it was like, right.
Yeah, exactly.
I think I sped up. I don't even think it slowed down. But I hit my brakes, nothing happened, and I hit him, and it was almost like golf ball effect. It was like ping, and when I hit him, he shot off of his wheels out in front of me. The truck's going all over the place. He's trying, you know, that hand's not out the window anymore, giving me the finger. Both of his hands are on the wheel trying to fight this thing, keeping it straight. I don't know how he ever kept it straight. But this, I caved in the back of that truck. That tailgate was laying in the back of the truck up next to the cab.
Wow.
And he never stopped. He never pulled over. He never called my dispatcher. Nothing. I never heard another thing about it. I pulled over. I was hoping he was going to stop. I was going to whip his ass at that time. I was young and dumb and, you know, full of testosterone.
Right.
But he never pulled over even. I mean, nothing. Wow. And that was the weirdest thing. I mean, I'd had some weird stuff happen at that point, but that was very, very strange that I never heard nothing about that. I don't know what he told his insurance company. I'd like to hear that conversation.
I hear that, man. That's got to be a wild one because that, you know, but that's, you know, that's the stuff that people think you can do to big trucks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can just slam on your brakes and stop. You know, oh, they're stopping in front of me. They're you know, giving me a brake check. So I, you know, I got to slam on my brakes now. And guess what? It ain't stopping. You know,
they don't realize.
They don't.
Yeah. Who are you? Yeah. Who are you trying to mess with there, bud?
Yep.
And me or you, because it's your funeral that you're contemplating, not mine.
That's exactly
Trust me,
right.
I'm not going to put it in the ditch to keep from hitting you in the ass end because you're being an asshole. I'm sorry. I'm just not going to do it.
Yep.
I'll put it in the ditch to miss a car full of kids or something. But, you know, you want to brake check me. I'm not going to. Sorry, pal.
Yeah.
We're going to see what happens.
Exactly.
Hope for the best.
Yeah. I mean,
what can you do?
Yeah. I mean, what'd you call it earlier? A coffin on wheels?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's really what you're doing. You're creating yourself this box that the potential is for you to die in if you don't stop doing these types of things. And people don't learn. They don't stop.
No.
You know, you just, all you want is people to drive with respect on the road for everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, are there drivers out there that aren't worth their weight? Of course, there are some pretty crummy drivers out there, and more every year, I find. But they're, for the most part, most of the guys out there that have been doing it for a few years, you know, they know what they're doing. They're professional drivers, number one. And, you know, I know the rules of the road. I know the laws of the road. Do I do something stupid every once in a while? Yeah, I do. I got to apologize to people on the road, of course, you know. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, I'll cut a driver off and because I got no choice, I could have probably stopped, but you know, I seen an opening. I didn't mean to do it. You know, it happens, but for the most part, we all kind of watch out for each other, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not trying to do things
right
on purpose on the road to tick somebody else off. You know, that's not the point of what we're doing. We're trying to do what we do as safely as we can, as responsibly as we can. You know,
I got to get out there and do it tomorrow, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I got to be back out here because this is how I make my living. So, you know, let's all just, you know, kind of take a little bit of a relaxer here and just all get to where we're going together. You know, let's all just take it easy. Yep. And it's just you're so right when you said how things have changed over the years. I mean, you look at how we look now and how things are, what the driving situations are now, and there's more cars on the road now than ever before. You've got more people in a hurry to get to where they want to get to than ever before. Yeah. You've got more distractions in cars and in trucks than ever before. Right. And it's like everybody just, you know, it seems like we have the mentality of, I'm just going to turn everything off. I'm going to turn off my brain, and my car is going to tell me when I get too close to somebody in front of me, or, you know, I got these little lights on my side mirrors that let me know when somebody's coming up in my blind spot now. So I don't have to pay attention to anything.
Right.
And they don't.
Exactly.
So consequently, they turn it all off. They turn themselves off. And,
and what's funny, I taught my girls how to drive. I have two daughters and, they went to driving school, but I also, you know, dad gave them pointers and, you know, kind of try to give them some words of wisdom from his years on the road. And I think that you can tell the kids that have parents that are professional drivers and the kids that don't. Because I think, you know, my kids probably, you know, they look at some of the things that I've been talking about over the years, and they've heard me, you know, complain about it and things that, you know, downright are, dangerous. And I think that they kind of give drivers a break, you know, on the road and, you know, because their old man's a driver, and, you know, they try not to do those stupid things. You know, I think that they're better drivers for it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that is the thing is, you know, you almost feel like you wish people would go back and relearn how to drive, you know?
Oh boy. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, some of these truck drivers coming out of truck driving school, I wouldn't pay them. I wouldn't let them haul a doghouse for me. I'm some of these guys, I don't even understand. I don't understand it. Am I that old now? I mean, I don't get it. I just don't understand this new batch of drivers coming in.
You don't understand it? They don't understand it.
Okay. Yeah. They can't even read English. How in the world did they get a CDL?
Yep.
I don't get it, man. I tell you what, man, I had a guy, I was at a truck stop and I was parked and there was an opening. I was on the end and there was probably eight openings between me and the guy that was closest to me. This guy come in there and he tried to back into one of these spots. Mm-hmm. He almost hit me a couple times.
Wow.
I'm talking eight spots that were in between me and the guy next to me, the closest guy next to me. This guy couldn't get him into any of those spots. He couldn't back that truck up to save his life. I actually got out, a guy got out that was parked in front of me, and we both met in the middle. And I looked at him. I said, we have to be getting pumped here. Where are the cameras? They have to be filming a show here or something. This has got to be a comedy bit.
No, oh, it's a show.
But there's no way in the world. Yeah. I mean, there's no way in the world this guy is that bad of a driver, but he was, it was for real. He could not back that truck up in any of those spots. And he's out there driving next to my family sometimes, probably, you know, that's what gets me.
Exactly.
You know, the girl that I live with, you know, I wouldn't want her driving, you know, next to this Yahoo out on the road. You know, I mean, what kind of decisions are you going to make it when the shit hits the fan, you know?
Yep, exactly. It is
scary.
It is scary. You're exactly right. It is really scary, you know, because he's supposed to be a professional. He's literally supposed to know what he's doing, you know?
He's fresh out of school.
Yes.
Well, it's like I say, you know, on our trucks, we have, you know, 1 million miles, 2 million, 3 million miles driven, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I just want my sticker to read. I have more miles in reverse than you have forward.
Buddy, I've used that a couple times, believe me.
Yes, sir.
That's a good one, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I went from the block company I went from there. I was out of work for a while. I worked I went to work for a place that hauled biofuels basically and waste from biofuels. Mm-hmm. We hauled I drove a Mack Sterling, I can't think of the name of the Mack. Advantage, maybe it was, but hauled tankers exclusively.
Okay.
And yeah, that was pretty interesting. Then I got away, left there. I actually went to work in inside of a plant. My cousin had worked for this place for years and years and years, and I thought it was a good company. But I got off the truck for a minute, and I was going through a thing, and I was off the truck for a year, and at the end of this year, this place that I had left called me and asked me if I wanted to come back. At first, I said no, and then I got to thinking about it. About a couple months later, I called her back and I said, "Hey, you still looking for a driver?" And she said, "Please, please come back and work for us." So I left there in a hurry. I tell you, I couldn't work inside with a bus hanging over me. I would crack up. I think I would lose it. You'd see me on the news probably with some people holding them hostage or something stupid. But I mean, it literally was terrible. It was one of the most terrible years of my life. And I was so happy to get back on the truck. I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah.
But after I went from there, I went to a better, I worked there for a little while after that. And then I went to a better place that hauled a lot of hazardous chemicals. And there I got my first taste of hauling 53-foot van trailers, which I'd never hauled before.
Okay.
And so that was a new experience. I learned a lot from them. It was a great place to work. At the time. Mm-hmm. And, the only thing really happened to me there, I was on the turnpike doing like probably 75, 77, somewhere in that area, mm-hmm. Miles an hour. And I blew a steer tire fully loaded with a 53-foot trailer, a 53-foot van trailer, fully loaded on my tractor. I blew a steer tire. And let me tell you, that was a ride that I won't soon forget at all. I don't know if you guys ever blew a steer tire or not while you're driving, but that is an experience.
Nope. I have not. I have not had that happen. Chip, you?
Yeah.
Nope. Never have happened, but I bet you that left a couple of racing stripes in your pants, huh?
I
tell you what, on the pucker scale, that was probably an 11 out of 10. That definitely puckered you right up. Right. I literally driving, I was talking to my girlfriend at the time. She heard it. She heard it go boom. But I'm just driving along, minding my own business as we do. And luckily there was nobody to the right of me. I blew a pasture side steer. So there was nobody in the right lane of me. And instantly I was in the next lane. I didn't even know what had happened. I was already in that lane. It jerked me over so fast.
Wow.
And then there was that lane and then the shoulder. I had enough, I don't know if it was, strength or adrenaline or whatever, but I had enough adrenaline to fight the wheel, not to hit the berm wall. I made it to the berm and got it stopped. And, buddy, I tell you, like I said, that was a pucker, a big pucker there, but that's the first and only time that's ever happened to me in my career. Mm-hmm. And I hope it never happens again. Let me tell you.
Oh my word. I can imagine, you know, that's why it's one of those things that you look at. And I've said this a million times on the show. That's why you hate when people ride right next to you, you know.
Oh.
Driver's side, passenger side, if you're in, you know, middle lane or hammer lane and they're on your right side, or you know, you're in the right lane and they're on your left-hand side. It's like, just don't, you know, anything can happen. It's still a vehicle. It's still, you know, something mechanical can go, a tire can blow, anything can happen. And people will just sit there and they'll ride right next to you. It's like, do you not understand? And apparently they don't. They don't understand danger that's around them.
They don't give it another thought.
No, they don't. It's like, those tires never blow.
My girlfriend and I rode motorcycles. You know, we both had motorcycles at one time. And we, you know, she's the same way as I am. Anytime we were on the road, even in our cars, you know, we don't ride next to semis, you know, cause we know what happens, you know.
Yes.
You know, you get past the semi as fast as you can and you get to where, and I tell everybody, if you cannot see that driver in his mirror, he cannot see you.
Yep.
I can't even say that enough or loud enough. For people, new drivers, you know, make sure you can see that guy's eyes in the mirror, because if he can't, you know, if you can't, he can't see you. You're in his blind spot, you know?
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly right. And it's one of those things that, you know, that's why it's like, you know, you, it's one of the things that they, you know, they hammer home with us all the time is make sure you're not driving in a pack. Try and get out of it, either pass or either get through it and speed up and get around it or back out of it so that the pack can get ahead of you. Like, you just don't want to be in a crowd of people because there's, you know, a crowd of vehicles because there's so many things that, that can go wrong. It just is, including goofy decisions that people make. You know, it's not just whether or not you blow a tire or something, you know, whatever, but you know, the decisions that people will make and what they got to do and what they're going to try and do. You know, there's just so many variables. And again, like you said, I mean, when you think about the whole automated trucks and you're like, until you can plan for every scenario that's out there, you know, and actually, I mean, how are you going to do this? You know, so I kind of agree with you.
You can plan for every scenario and still something's going to surprise you.
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
Because you can't plan for them all. Because the minute you think you have everything figured out, somebody does something crazy and you're like, really? I didn't see that one coming.
I mean, reminds me of another story. I was driving down the road and everybody was doing what they were supposed to be doing on the road. It just happened this guy decided he was going to go fishing that day. And he tied a boat to strap down a boat on the top of his car. Well, either one of the straps broke or he didn't tie it tight enough or whatever, but he went by me. He was going too fast with a boat on top of his car. But he went by me and he got in front of me a few lengths, and that boat come off of the top of that car.
Wow.
And when that happened, I heard it go, woof, you know, it made a noise. And this thing's up in the air spinning like,
we have liftoff.
And I'm looking at this thing like in slow motion. I'm looking at this thing going, oh my God, there's nowhere I can go. There's people on both sides of me. I got to grin and bear this. Hopefully the nose of this thing, though, I'm already seeing it. The nose of this thing's going to come down and go right through my windshield. I can just see it. Thank God. I don't even know how it happened. It went right over me and hit the back of me, but bounced off. It didn't hit my windshield. I thought that's exactly where it was headed because Murphy, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He always usually shows up in my life.
Yep. Enter Mr. Murphy and his law.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's like crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. That's the variables that you can't plan for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was a young driver too, but I knew enough. If I could have, I would have gotten out of the way. But, you know, it's like trying to dodge a freaking lightning bolt. You know, it's like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
You know, I've only really been really scared, like deep down scared in my bones a couple times in a truck. Most things don't really shake me too bad. But one time I was driving in a rainstorm and I was probably driving too fast, but I was at highway speeds. I was doing 70 or above a little bit. And I was at the bottom of this hill. It was a decline. And I think I was 271, one of those real deep hills they got over there by the Cuyahoga Valley. And it was raining really hard. And I got down to the bottom of that hill and I started hydroplaning. And I'd never felt anything like that in my life. And I even spun a 43-foot flatbed one time all the way around on the highway on ice in a semi.
Wow.
And that didn't shake me as bad as this shook me. I felt totally, I was not in control for a good 3 seconds. And that 3 seconds, so many things went through my mind. You know, I could feel the tires above the water skating. You know, it was such a weird, weird, strange feeling. And that fear hit me so deep down inside that, I locked up. I couldn't even think because I was drifting towards the berm. And you know, there was a nice little cliff on the other side of that berm. So, you know, it's like that scared me. That really scared me. It taught me a valuable lesson that day. I really respect rain a lot more after that. I wasn't a real new driver when that happened. I was pretty experienced by that time. But there's nothing you could do about it. That happens. Hydroplane is a thing. It happens.
Yeah. And the funny thing is people think, well, that, you know, that truck weighs so much. How in the world can that thing hydroplane?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, it'll do it. You know, but it'll do it. I can't explain the physics, but I can tell you what it feels like.
Exactly.
Well, here is two of the physics.
A flatbed and empty. I can tell you what it feels like.
Oh, yeah. It's the craziness of what we do. And you just, you know, you pray every day that you get home safely. You know,
yep. There's 101 ways to die on a truck or more.
Yes, there is.
There really is. Yes. There really is. I mean, if you don't do it to yourself, somebody else is doing it to you. I tell you, one of the most dangerous things you can do in a truck is be on the berm and get out of your driver's door.
Yes, sir. That is the truth.
To this day, that strikes fear in me. I cannot stand to be broke down or have to pull over for some reason and have to get out of that driver's door. That makes me jumpier than a frog. I'm telling you, that just goes all over me.
Yeah.
Because people don't obey the law. They don't get over.
Exactly.
You know, they don't give you that common courtesy. And a lot of drivers don't, you know, and I don't understand why, you know. And it's that whole thing we were talking about, these new batch of drivers, they have no respect for anyone.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. It's become a different industry, you know.
It has.
You would think that really in time has. Things would become more professional, and it's like they haven't. They've actually
Yeah. And even with the laws getting more strict, you know, it seems like the laws get stricter and the expectations get lower. You know, it's like it's going backwards.
Yeah.
But you know what? They're still not going to shake the love of driving out of me. I don't care how many idiots got on the road. I still love doing it every day. I really do.
Right.
And all we can do is, you know, do what we're supposed to do, do that next right thing, and try to be as cautious as you can and do your job, you know.
That's it. Because, you know, the other option is to find yourself working in a warehouse or working, you know, in an office. Like,
you're right.
You know, and that's your other option. No. So.
You know? Right, exactly. And you're right. Yeah. That's it.
And like,
or try to retire early.
Or try to retire early. You know, the thing is when you do this, you do this for long enough that you can't see yourself working inside. You know, you can't see yourself working in an office. And there's nothing wrong with those jobs. I don't mean I mean, thank God they're there to do those jobs, because it's just, you know, you spend so much time out and you're in charge of your ship, you know, and you're doing what you need to do. To be stuck inside is just, I can't imagine if you work the same amount of hours working in a warehouse as you do driving a truck, you're like, I couldn't do that.
Oh God.
I can't do that. I can't be stuck.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be going like you. I'd be going stir crazy, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh dude, I could work a 65 hour week on a truck and not even blink an eye. Doesn't even feel like a 60 hour week.
Yeah, and that's you got that in by Thursday.
Forget it. 30 hours seems like, you know.
Yes.
Doing all doubles inside. Yes.
It's the truth. It is just the truth. It's the nature of what the job does to you, because you get so used to being out and about, you know, doing the things you want to do and going where you want to go. You know, you're going to wherever your delivery is, but you're the person who's doing it. You're, you know, in charge, and you're the one. Yeah. I mean, you got things, rules you got to follow and what the company wants and whatever, but you're not stuck in a single place dealing with 50 other people. It's stuck in that single place and all of the interpersonal struggles and squabbles and problems and all those things that go on. It's just because we're human beings, you know, you put a bunch of people together in one office and most people are going to get along, but there's always going to be a problem. There's always going to be something that happens.
Man.
And so
there's always going to be chitter chatter at the water cooler.
There is. If there's a problem inside
it.
My little office, it's with me and myself.
Yep.
And there's no
between
getting
the
away
three
from
of us,
that.
Me, myself, and I.
You got it.
And you know what? That's funny you say that, because I always call it my office. That's my office I go to every day. And people, I'm kind of known anywhere I go for keeping my truck clean. And even if it's an old truck, like now I'm driving a 2009 L9000 Kenworth. Well, it's an W9000L. That's what it is, I think. Yeah, W9000, not an L9000. Mm-hmm. Right. It's an old truck. It's got some dings and some faded paint and all that. But I tell you what, I really love driving it. It's a fun truck to drive. And I keep that thing, you know, when I got in it, there was mud on the dashboard. I'm not talking dust. There was mud on the dashboard.
Wow.
It's not like that anymore. It's you could eat in there and not have to worry about getting botulism. You know what I mean? But
that's a plus.
I'm kind of known, you know, people, why do you clean your truck so much? Why do you keep it so clean? You know, why do you, it's not even your truck. And I say to them, that's my office, man. That's, That's where I spend most of my time. I spend more time in there than I do in the house.
Yes.
At the house, you know?
Exactly.
Why would I want to clean? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yep. Exactly. I want to at least, you know, tolerably clean. You know, it doesn't have to, you know,
yeah.
You realize what we do and you know, you get in and out of the rain, you get in and out sometimes, your boots get muddy or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
You know, but you want it to at least be presentable. You know, I don't want to I don't want to sit in a pigsty to drive.
Right.
You know,
exactly. Yeah. I don't want to open up the door and have dust flying around because right. There's so much dust on my floorboard.
Yeah.
That it, you know, it gets on my sandwich that I'm eating or whatever the case may be.
Sure. Exactly.
You know, or be afraid to roll down the windows because you're going to get a dust storm in there. You know, I mean, that's ridiculous.
It is. Yes.
But
yes,
some drivers
is.
Are like that, man. Some guys, that's the way they roll. I don't get it, but whatever.
No, you're totally right there. Yes, sir. You are totally right. Did you ever do any training or anything like that? Did you ever train other drivers?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I did. I actually did some training at the first place at the block company. Uh-huh. There at the end, I was training some guys, and boy, that was an experience. Let me tell you.
I can imagine.
You know, I wasn't training in semis or anything. I was just training on the mainly on the dump trucks and the block trucks. But, I would let the guy drive, you know, and let him drive to the job, you know. Well, actually, what I'd start doing is letting him drive back while the truck was empty. That would be the first thing I'd do. I'd first get a feel for the guy, talk to him, let him drive back empty. And then if he did okay, then I would allow him to drive full the next time and, you know, then drive back empty. Well, a couple guys broke me of that because I'm telling you, I told him right off the bat, you don't pay me enough to put my life in danger like this. You know, you want to hire this guy, you know, and then they would take what I'd say and they'd mill it around. Like, I didn't know what I was talking about. Well, why do you have me training if you don't want to respect what I'm telling you? This guy's not worth it. Don't hire him,
right.
You know, or this guy's okay. You know, he's good, you know, hire him or whatever. But yeah, I had a couple guys, scared me. I mean, in the passenger seat, I'm looking for the pedals and the gear shifter, you know, and not really understanding. I had to ask one guy, hey, do you wear glasses and are you supposed to have them on now? This guy would wait to the very last second to hit his brakes anywhere, like behind, coming up to a light, you know, or, you know, if he was parking or what, it was like, run, stop. You know, it was like, I was getting whiplash, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm trying to tell him, you can't do that when you're, you know, especially hauling blocks. You can't do that jerky, herky kind of thing, you know? He couldn't get it. He was worried about the girls walking down the street. You know, we're talking the 90s, so the micro minis were in style.
Right.
So here this guy's looking down in cars, and he's wolf howling, wolf whistling. I don't know about you guys, but if I was with a trainer, I would want to kind of watch my P's and Q's, at least until I got my own truck, right?
Yep.
No, these guys would be hanging out the truck, wolf whistling, not paying attention. I literally made one guy pull over and I said, you'll never be at the helm again while I'm in the passenger seat. Never. I took him back to the yard and I said, get out. And I never let him back in my truck again.
Wow.
And they're like, well, how are we supposed to? I don't care. I do not care. And that's what I told him. You don't pay me enough to put my life in danger. For that kind of guy, I fire him now.
For what they pay you for training, you can't buy enough drugs for it to compensate.
Right.
Exactly.
They don't have enough whiskey at the bar when I get off.
Well, you know, the funny thing is like when you get somebody in the behind the wheel that drives like that, who drives that herky jerky way, they're on the, you know, 100% on the fuel and 100% on the brakes. And they, you know, that's how they drive their car.
Exactly.
You know, that's what they do in there because they're so used to it. That's what they think they can do in a big truck. You can't.
You know, they're replacing their brakes every freaking three months or
yes,
so.
Yes, sir. You got that right. You know that's what's happening.
Oh, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
And
yeah, I had some pretty decent experiences too. I met some pretty nice guys and really wanted to learn the trade. But I had some doozies, believe me. I had a guy one time, I told the company, I don't think he's going to work out. It wasn't a definite hard no, but I said, you know, that this one's up to you. I don't know. You know, if I own the company and drove with him, I probably wouldn't give him a job, but you know, maybe he'll get better. You know, I wasn't a total, you know, jerk about it.
Right.
But, so they hired him and, And it, like I said, it wasn't a hard no on my part. Mm-hmm. So a few days later, I'm pulling out of the yard and I see him coming down the road, and he's the truck's going, and then it would slow down and stop. Then it would go, and then it slow down and stop. And there's smoke pouring out of this truck. He roached the clutch so bad that he didn't even make it back into the yard. They literally had to tow the truck about 200 feet inside our yard because he didn't make it. He roached the clutch totally.
Wow.
Burn it up in one trip. One trip.
Wow. Yep.
There must have been something wrong with that clutch.
Yeah, the driver.
There must have been something wrong with that clutch, because that just can't happen.
And then he wanted to say, well, the way I trained him.
Right.
Of course. Yeah, it's your fault.
Well, the trainer never, well.
Wow, there are some things you just can't help, you know?
I mean,
sometimes, as I say, you just can't fix stupid.
There you go. That's it.
Yeah. And it wears you out trying.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. You know, it's just, it's crazy. Right. And that's, you know, I mean, that's, again, that's the industry. You're either going to rise or fall in this thing, and you're going to figure it out or you're not.
Right.
You know, and hopefully.
You know, driving's not that kind of job.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's not the kind of job that you go, you know what, I'm going to go get this job and make some money and do something else. It really isn't that kind of job.
Yep.
It's you got to devote yourself.
You do. Because it's not a 9-to-5-er. You are not going to do a 9-to-5 in this industry. It's just not going to happen. And unless you're like willing to do that, you know, it's going to be a pain. And you're going to hate it.
Like I said before, you know, you're under a microscope. You're held by a different standard in your personal life as well.
Yep.
So it's a commitment. You know, driving is a commitment.
It is. It literally is. And you're held to that higher standard all the time. Not like you said, in your personal life, but when you are on the clock, when you are driving, when you're chewing up your log, you are exceptionally in a much greater way under the microscope.
Yep.
Because there is DOT out there. There are the regular police officers out there. There is the public out there. Because you know what? When you're rolling down the road with a 48 or a 53 foot box van, you are a rolling freaking billboard. Your company's name is plastered all over the sides. It's on the back.
Yep.
You know, that's just the way it is. And so everybody's looking and everybody's paying attention. And nowadays, unfortunately, everybody's going after the people with deep pockets.
Yeah. And, you know, drivers, it's the only, one of the only industries that we are governed by every single police entity or law enforcement entity out there.
Yep.
Anybody and everybody can pull a truck over for any reason whatsoever.
Yep.
From game warden, you know, right up to, you know, town cop, sheriff, a state trooper, DOT, PUCO. I mean, anybody can pull a truck over for any reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got to be ready to, you know, open up the back and, you know, show them proof you're not hauling illegals or, you know, the job before the milk job I drove, we, there was a furnace at their yard and it was an environmental, place. Basically, we hauled dangerous chemicals there. And we either used the fuel to fire up the furnace to burn the other stuff that wasn't fuel related, the dangerous chemicals, and it would burn it up into nothing. And they have all these special, you know, filters and stuff to be able to do that. Well, ATF used us for dangerous drugs that were confiscated in raids. They would accompany the truck driver. They would shadow the driver. Mm-hmm. On the way to the yard. And when you got to the yard, there'd be guys standing in the yard with their M1s or their ARs rather. And, full battle fatigues, scoping out the situation, making sure that the cartel's not going to try to confiscate the drugs back. You know, we would take it to where I worked there and they'd burn them up in the furnace. Not only drugs, but illegal shipments of any kind, say like, counterfeit shoes or counterfeit makeup was a big one because it's so dangerous. And a lot of people don't realize how much of that stuff comes in through shipping containers.
Sure.
Through our ports, you know, every one that they catch, probably two get through. You know, the makeup, it was a big one because, you know, coming from overseas, China was a big one. They don't test it. And they would use illegal chemicals in their makeup, and they would put it under a name brand and sell it for full price. And, you know, sometimes that stuff would be dangerous, you know, enough to kill a person if they used it on their body, because they would have a reaction to whatever chemical was in there that wasn't tested by FDA.
Sure.
So that was a big one that another one that we did was when they changed the laws for all those e-pens, especially in Pennsylvania and I think Virginia, where you weren't allowed to have any kind of flavored nicotine sold because of the children. You know, they figured it was a gateway for the kids. So
right.
Here these companies had all this inventory of these flavored nicotine pens and cartridges that they had to destroy. It was a total loss.
Wow.
So we hauled loads and loads and loads of that to the furnace to burn. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like an interesting thing.
Again, you know, like you said, held to a higher standard. You know, mm-hmm. you definitely don't want to do something stupid when you're being followed by the ATF or the FDA or both.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're watching you with a fine-tooth comb.
Right.
I'm going to go off on my tangent now.
Yo, go for it.
Now, here's the thing. He's talking about one truckload, okay?
Uh-huh.
Where are you at geographically? Ohio or out west of there?
Yes.
You're in Ohio.
Ohio.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everybody knows everything from New York and Jersey goes to Ohio that gets burned.
Right.
Pennsylvania is just the throughway. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's one truck going out to Ohio. Now you had that deal out in Palestine, Ohio there. We're talking rail cars and rail cars. You imagine how much shit that was on those rail cars if you had to put it into a truck. How many trucks would be going across 80 to go to the incinerator plant to burn this stuff?
Right.
You know, it's unbelievable.
A lot.
Yes.
A lot. And believe me, I know some of them chemicals that got spilled that day. And I feel very, very sorry for mm-hmm. those people that live in that area, because it's never going to recover.
Right.
It'll be 100 years before that.
It's going to be like up there in New York. Oh, what the heck was that? Love Canal? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Back in the 70s. Yeah.
Almost like Chernobyl, almost.
Yeah, yeah. Sort of.
Although I'm sure.
In 25 years, they can put a McDonald's back up.
I'm telling you, that they're going to have cancer clusters there like nobody's business.
Yeah.
And I hate to say that, but I, you know, I learned a lot about chemicals working for that company. You had to know your stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Some of the chemicals we hauled, we had to actually have pre-planned routes.
Yep.
With the sheriff's office.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's how dangerous they were. And we couldn't go through certain areas.
Right.
Yep. That's crazy.
Yeah. I feel sorry for them people. Yes. Really do.
I totally agree with you on that. Hey, I had one, as we kind of, you know, wind things down here, I had this one spot on your email that you had seen a hair covered bipedal. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I wasn't in a truck when I see, a work truck. I was in a pickup truck with my dad. But yeah, my dad and I were coming back from West Virginia. My family's from West Virginia. And we were down there at my grandmother's place. We were doing some squirrel hunting. Mm-hmm. It was in October. And I think it was 91 or 92. Anyways, we were. My wife at the time was pregnant with my youngest child. So I wanted to get back earlier. I wanted to leave Saturday night instead of Sunday morning. So I talked my dad into leaving real late Saturday night after we got out of the woods. So we're driving, and of all places, and this is what really freaked me out about it. I've hunted some pretty rugged country in my lifetime. I used to be a hunting fanatic. I hunted two states every year for 20 some odd years without fail.
Wow.
I would take 2 weeks off every deer season, 2 weeks without fail, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what. That was my religion. But so I've never seen anything in the woods that I couldn't up until this time that I couldn't, you know, explain. But we're driving down the road. It's 1 in the morning, 1:30 in the morning. And of all places, we're going down Route 21. I don't know if maybe some of your listeners knows what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's not what you would consider rugged country. I mean, there are some farms and stuff out there, but there's a little river, a little creek that runs parallel to that for a long ways. I can't think of the name of the creek, the body of water, but actually people can do it and stuff. But we come around this bend, this turn. There's nobody else on the road. You know, it's 1:30 in the morning. You know, in October, you know, they roll up their sidewalks in these little towns,
right,
up and down 21. So we come in this little bend in the road, and my headlights hit something standing on the side of the road. And I was doing probably a little over the speed limit, I'm sure, at this cruise set. And it was just maybe 4 or 5 seconds that I seen this thing. And as I went by it, I looked, but in the dark, but it was illuminated for a good 3-4 seconds. And my dad and I both seen it. We were both, you know, of course I was driving. My dad was awake.
Mm-hmm.
And we passed it, and we got down the road, maybe 2 or 3 miles, and you could have heard a pin drop. And about the same time, we both looked at each other and we went, "What was that? What in the world was that?"
Right.
And I'll tell you what I've seen. I've seen a bipedal creature. What caught my eye was how big it was. It wasn't so much that it was wide, it was tall.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't real, real wide or thick. It was real tall. And it was kind of bent over top of a, what I assume was a roadkill or a freshly killed deer on the side of the road. And it had its hands down inside of this thing doing something. I could see that plain as day.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see the steam coming up out of this deer. So it was freshly killed, whatever, however means it had happened. Possibly could have been a smaller one, totally underground underneath the big one.
Mm-hmm.
My mind kind of went that way. Like I saw another one there, but I couldn't take my eyes off the one that was, you know, kind of bent over. But even bent over, it was higher than the front of my dad's Ford truck.
Wow.
You know, like if it bent over, the back was higher than the hood.
Yeah.
And because the ground kind of went down, it didn't go up. It went down, and it was like parallel to the hood of that truck as I went by. And I remember the eyes of this thing. I looked right through me. And for a few seconds, I was like paralyzed. I couldn't think. I couldn't say anything. I just didn't even know. My mind wasn't computing what I was seeing.
Right.
Because I'd never seen anything like this. I didn't know what it was. And to this day, I don't call it a Sasquatch. I don't know what it was. It was a bipedal hairy creature.
Sure.
And it was huge. It was high. It was really tall. But that's what I saw. I'll tell you what my dad saw. Now, my dad, you'd have to know my dad. He is old school to a fault.
Okay.
He was born in West Virginia, you know, Navy man, old school. Like I said, he, a Christian man, been going to church for years and years and years. You know, he's got that good old time religion. I don't say that to mock. I mean, he really was a good Christian, is a good Christian man.
Mm-hmm.
He claimed that he saw a wild boar. Now I want you to let that soak in for a couple seconds.
Right.
You know where we're at. We're on Route 21.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm probably only about 120 miles from Cleveland, Ohio, from downtown Cleveland.
Okay.
And my dad's seeing a wild boar that's the size of his pickup truck, basically.
Right.
I said, Dad, it would take me more faith to believe that was a Sasquatch than to think that was a wild boar that big. It doesn't even make any sense whatsoever in any language or any place in the world that you would see a wild boar that huge. But that's what his mind saw. And to this day, that's what his mind saw. He will not say that it was a bipedal creature. He won't say it. He will not say it. It doesn't fit into his belief system.
Yep.
And his mind won't allow him. His mind just won't allow him to say what he saw.
Sure.
Because in his mind, he saw a wild boar.
Yep. It has to.
What are you going
to
do? You know, what are you going to do with that? You know, it's like,
he's got to rationalize it in his own mind. And it's okay. Yep. I get that. You know, I don't.
Definitely,
you know,
okay.
Yeah. Yep. 100%.
I know what I saw.
Yeah. Exactly.
And
exactly. That's interesting.
And I'll tell you what, ever since that day, I never was really a big Bigfoot guy. Like I said, I've been spending time in the woods by myself since I was, you know, 10 years old. You know, I'd walk up in the woods before dark or before daylight by myself. You know, nothing ever fazed me in the woods. There was nothing in the woods that I didn't think that I couldn't handle with my rifle in my hand or my shotgun.
Sure.
But ever since that day, it totally changed my life. It really did. I totally became a Bigfoot fanatic. I mean, my girlfriend will tell you, you want to know anything about Sasquatch or any kind of history or anything like that? Ask me. I'm an encyclopedia about it now.
Yeah.
Because I search for answers.
Sure.
And I wanted to know how did this happen?
Right.
Where it happened. I could almost even understand it if I saw it in some of the places that I've hunted, like in Pocahontas County, West Virginia, where you could get up in the mountains and really get lost. And it's hard to get lost sometimes on the East Coast in today's world.
Right.
Because most places there are developed. Or you're at least going to run by a road sometime.
Exactly. But, you're going to come across civilization somewhere.
Yeah. But not where I saw it. That just didn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Sure.
But again, I didn't pick my sighting, but that's definitely my sighting.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. I'm glad you shared it because that's really interesting. You know,
I don't share that with too many people, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah, me too. I really am glad. I really appreciate you sharing that. You know, was there anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap these things?
I think that just about does it. I'm sure there's probably got 100 more stories in me, but maybe I'd come on again.
Yeah,
but,
definitely, dude. We'd love to have you back on.
I've had a great time. I'm really glad you guys had me on.
Oh my word. We enjoyed this. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed your stories and you're a really, really good storyteller. You know what I mean? Like when I say that, I mean, like you present yourself, you have information and you're just laying it out there and you can actually picture this in your head what's going on, and I appreciate
I appreciate that.
I really do. This was a lot of fun. This was a good a really good conversation, and hang on with us, and we'll just close this out. And so we enjoyed ourselves on the show. Scott enjoyed himself. We hope you enjoyed yourself too listening to this. And Shep, if they enjoyed themselves and they liked the show, what can they do?
They can pat themselves on the back.
Don't break your arm doing it.
Yes, exactly. They can share the show. Share with everybody, their friends, colleagues, drivers, anybody, parents at the PTA meeting.
There you go.
Because we're politically correct here.
Oh, yeah. Because you're a people person.
That's right.
Yeah.
But just get the word out, you know.
Yeah.
We like to hear your stories, and this is what we do. We hear the stories, put them out on the waves here, and we hopefully collect a little fan base as we're trying to get our little niche here.
Exactly. So, and the more people you share the show with, the more people get to hear the show, and hopefully that inspires other people to email us and come on the show and have a conversation. That's always the goal, is to shine the light on the drivers in the industry.
If they find the show accidentally, doesn't matter. Just find
fantastic.
It. Just
find the show. Yeah. I mean, I was just talking to a guy the other day, he said he kind of, found it in an accidental way, kind of stumbled across it. It's like, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. We really do.
Right.
So all that being said, Chip, you want to sign us out?
Yes. Keep the hammer down in the hammer lane. Thanks for listening.
Yep. Until next time. Take care.
Bye-bye.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.